Broadcasting from Youngstown, Ohio, this is the MV Red Podcast, the show where we talk about news and politics impacting the Mahoning Valley, the state of Ohio, and the USA. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, find us on your favorite podcast streaming app or visit our website, www.mvred.com. If you want to share your opinion with us, please email info@mvred.com, as we would love to hear from you. Now, let's get things started. Here are your hosts, Michael Metzinger and Dane Davis.
All right, I think we're live. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode, I had to check here, 24 of the MV Red Podcast, our election recap episode. It's been, it's been 27 days since the election. Is that right, Dane?
Has it been? I don't even know what day it is today. So the fact that you know, that's pretty impressive.
I think it was November 2nd. It's the 29th today. I mean, everything.
No, it wasn't November 2nd. It was.
Wasn't it?
It was November 3rd. November 4th? November 3rd. November 3rd. The first Tuesday.
Okay. Gotcha. I was a little off there. Nonetheless, we apologize that we haven't had a chance to do a recap or a wrap up of the election, but we're here this evening to do so. We're going to talk a little bit about that, talk about what things could look like in a possible Biden administration starting January 20 of 2021, talk a lot in this episode about the Mahoning Valley going red from Trumbull down to Mahoning and then down in the Columbiana County. So a lot has been being said about that on a national level. I've seen on Twitter. I'll share some of those tweets this evening with you. And then lastly, I want to talk a little bit at the conclusion of the episode about the big race that's going to be talked about, I think, a lot in Ohio political circles in 2021 is going to be the Republican primary for governor between Mike DeWine and whoever decides to ultimately run against Governor DeWine in 2022. So before we get to that point, Dane, I know we just chatted off air, but how was your Thanksgiving? Everything going well with you and your family?
Yeah, everything's going well. I apologize, we haven't done an episode. Actually, believe it or not, people have been asking about where's the MV Red Podcast. And that's not a lie, right? Like, people have been seriously like, oh, you guys sad that Trump lost. And I'm being genuine when I say that I've been legitimately very busy with work and with family and then the holidays. So we almost did an episode after the election, and I think something happened.
Yes. There's a massive power outage.
Yeah.
My power was out the entire night. At one point, they said it wasn't going to be on till Thursday. It ended up coming on about 24 hours after the fact, but we had it all planned. We were going to do it two weeks ago today. And yeah, I didn't have power, so I couldn't do it. So I apologize.
Yeah, that was it. And then I got busy with other stuff, and it was just one thing after another. But we're here. We're going to talk the election, talk about local politics, talk about, we're just going to get comfy. I think it's going to be a comfy night. I'm drinking some bubbly. I don't know what flavor it is. It's like purple red bubbly. It's raspberry cherry. It's cherry bubbly. I put up some Christmas lights today. I'm in the Christmas spirit. I'm not in the holiday spirit, because there is no such thing as the holiday spirit. There's only the Christmas spirit. I there might be the Hanukkah spirit as well. But there's no such thing as a holiday spirit. A holiday is a generic, non thing, right? Have you ever noticed that corporations, because they don't want to use the C word, which is, Christianity or Christ, will wish people, you can do this. Go find this, right? They'll wish people happy Hanukkah, fine. Happy Kwanzaa, fine. They'll even wish people happy Ramadan. But on the day of Christmas itself, they'll say happy holidays. On Christmas, hey, fucker, what other holidays are you celebrating on Christmas Day, right? Like, it's Christmas, wish us a Merry Christmas. It just really grinds my gears. I'm not against, non-believers or Jewish believers or whatever it may be. But the reason we have the holiday season is because of Christmas. It is. It's a simple fact. If Christmas didn't exist, we would not be going all out for Hanukkah, right? We would not be going all out for Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa, by the way, and I don't think I'm being offensive in saying this, is a completely made up artificial holiday. It's not like
I don't know the history behind it.
Oh, you should look it up because it's actually quite fascinating. But
there's not a religious undertone to it, correct?
No. It was made by black liberation activists in the 1960s. And it used, I think, a lot of Swahili words, which, by the way, Swahili in that area of Africa is not even representative of the entire sub-Saharan African population. So Kwanzaa is actually, in many ways, the cultural imperialism of the Swahili people and the people that came up with it. But it was this generic, you know, artificial black holiday, and it never caught on. But like the post office makes stamps for Kwanzaa, and you know, I have no fear in attacking it, because it's not a genuine holiday. Like Hanukkah is a genuine holiday that Jewish people celebrate. I would never make fun of it. It's just a jerk thing to do. But Kwanzaa it's a fake holiday. It's fake. It's totally fake. But I don't know. Okay, so let's talk about the election. We're not here on Dane's holiday discourse. Maybe we should actually have an episode dedicated to the various holidays and Christmas. And I'll give you the red pill on Christmas and what's going on. By the way,
we can do that.
They want to cancel Christmas. Like, they don't want you to celebrate Christmas. Isn't it interesting how, like, you couldn't go, like, okay, if I'm going to go protest police, it's okay. That doesn't spread COVID. But if I protest, like, Trump, or if I celebrate Biden winning the election, I'm allowed to do that. But if I go protest Trump losing, that spreads COVID. But if I go to a Black Lives Matter protest, it doesn't, right? Isn't that interesting? Isn't it also really interesting how, like, if you go see your family on Thanksgiving, Big Brother, the government, who really truly cares about you, is going to, like, ask you a ton of questions and interrogate your children if you live in the state of Vermont about what, you know, you're doing, and you have to sign an affidavit if you buy a turkey that could feed over 12. But, oh, by the way, Black Friday, oh, no problem. Go shop. Go shop, citizen. Go consume. Consume product. Buy things. Go shopping. Spending time with your family, that'll kill everybody you love. But shopping in a giant mall with tons of people sweating and fighting over a 4K TV, that's okay. You know, and that's why when it comes to Christmas, they desperately want to cancel Christmas, but it there's that consumer element, right? So they just want to destroy the Christ in Christmas, but we can't let them. We can't let them do that.
Unfortunately, I think they've won to an extent, because now I hate to say this, like, even in the back of my mind when I'm talking to somebody,
yeah,
the idea of saying Merry Christmas to them,
yeah,
or should I say Happy Holidays, it's yeah, in my mind. And that's enough, right, for me to say they've won to an extent.
They have. And no, they absolutely have.
I have to watch, like, in my job, because, like, where I work, we do have a number of Jewish clients. And for the most part, I know which ones are Jewish and which ones are not.
Right.
But I can understand from that respect. But, like,
right,
in the general public, when I'm out and about shopping and all that, I'm there because in anticipation of Christmas, I guess from the secular sense. But I'm really, you know, as a Christian, I'm going to celebrate it from that aspect. But I'm with you. It's something that I think they are trying to cancel to an extent in some way.
Well, they wanted
to try it, yeah. They push this idea of holiday. Like this evening, we just watched my wife and our two kids. It's I think it's like a new version of The Grinch, but I was shocked in the movie. They had one of the Christmas songs. I don't know which one it was, but it was actually like a church one that you would hear. And I'm like, I was sort of shocked to hear, like, in that movie that they actually had a church version of a Christmas song in it, because they were saying Christ. I don't know which one it was. Ooh, I forget.
Oh, you can't say that word. No, I was stunned.
And this was I don't know who. It wasn't Disney because it was on Netflix. So I'm not even sure who produced it, but I was sort of surprised by that. But that's how low we are with this whole idea of Christmas, that I'm shocked that in the movie The Grinch in 2020, they say the word Christ.
Well, here's the one that really, really gets me, is when they rename Christmas trees holiday trees. I don't know how we got on this topic, but like a Christmas tree, there's no such thing as a holiday tree. Okay. There's no other holiday. There's no such thing as a holiday is a generic noun. There's no capital H holiday, and there's no capital H holiday tree, right? There's a Christmas tree. There's no other group or no other holiday do they put up like pine trees with like stuff inside of it, and they put stars or angels on top of it. That's Christmas. It's a Christmas tree. Okay. There's no such thing as a holiday tree. but you have villages, as if not to be offensive, will celebrate and call it holiday trees. Like, you know, the American government is supposedly a secular government, and I get that and I respect that. But the country, the people, this was always a Christian people in a Christian country. It was a Protestant Christian country and people. And to deny that heritage, you know, I don't get it. It's like, you know, Christians built this country by and large. They make it one of the greatest places on earth. And then all these other people migrate in and they're like, okay, now that we're here, we're going to just get rid of Christianity and make you kind of ashamed to be a Christian. It's like, oh, wait a minute. You know, I'm not saying that we should have a, you know, the Pope ruling America or anything like that, or you know, Bill Graham, you know, running the country, Franklin Graham, the evangelist. But, you know, let's at least say Christmas tree and let's say Merry Christmas, you know. It's okay. That's my one message is I think conservative, and we're going to get into this in the election. I'm going to tie it together. You just wait, Michael. It's okay to be conservative. It's okay. It's okay to say Merry Christmas. There's nothing to be ashamed of. You know, we got to stop kowtowing to these people. But anyways, I'll stop.
I love it. We have my wife in the chat saying she says Merry Christmas and she has no regrets. She loves this holiday podcast. We have to do it just a holiday edition of this show.
Yeah.
We'll have some festive decorations and what have you on.
Oh, that would be lovely. Yeah.
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 Anyhow, so let's talk about the 2020 election. We'll just say it now. I'm sure there's going to be some people out there who are still holding out hope that Trump could somehow pull off the absolute unthinkable. I'm just not one of them. He needs like five states to flip. It's just not going to happen. We could talk about some of the anomalies and how Joe Biden, of all people, could get 80 million votes and 11 million more votes than Barack Obama. It was a high turnout election, but I'm not getting there. I do think Trump lost. It was close, but I will say this, and it's important to note, Dane had 49 out of the 50 states right in his prediction. I was not as good at 47 out of 50, but nonetheless, what both of states? Us. Well, you just missed Georgia, and then I missed Georgia, Pennsylvania, and Arizona. Because as you remember, the two states we differed in our prediction were Pennsylvania and Arizona. And, you know, Biden won those. I was wrong there. And then we both had Trump winning Georgia, albeit we said it was going to be tight, and it ended up being pretty damn tight, and Biden ended up eking it out.
So allow me to put you on the spot, Michael. Do you believe there was fraud? And do you believe there was enough fraud to tip the election to Joe Biden?
Is there fraud? Yeah,
I think there were questions.
I think there was fraud to tip the election. No, I think enough five states you would need to flip. And just again, I look at some of the things, like I look at Youngstown's voting numbers. I look at Cleveland's voting numbers and how those inner cities compared to turnout in like Detroit and Milwaukee and Philadelphia, it does look a little off. And there were some anomalies, like, you know, as an auditor, we're taught in our audit course or classes in college that Benford's Law, I'm sure maybe Dan, you're probably familiar with it. I don't know how well it works with election data, but they're, you know, the way the curve looks for Trump's numbers looks very reasonable for Biden's, but I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I do think ultimately the polling data all summer long at the national level pointed to Trump being behind. We said that if the race was probably around 4 points, Trump had a chance. It's still, as of like maybe earlier last week, this past week was around a little over a 4 percentage point lead for Biden, which is still considerably better than what the polling data showed heading into election day. I think on a national level, it was something to the tune of 8 or 9 points in the averages. I know on 538, he projected an 8-point Biden win. So there were big polling misses, but in terms of fraud, I think the issue you could have would be with the voting by mail. I think that is where it's susceptible to fraud. I think in some of these states, like in Nevada, where everybody on the voter rolls, whether they're alive, whether they're dead, whether they live there or not, were sent ballots. There's no telling how many ballots were returned. Like if I would have received a ballot, you know, what's from stopping me other than being, I'm an ethical person. What's from stopping somebody to return that ballot? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But was it widespread enough to flip an election? I question that. That's just me looking at it. You know, I do think there are some questionable things when you look at the numbers, but I don't think it's enough to flip things.
What I don't understand, I admittedly have not been following the post-election litigation and evidence as close as you may think that I've been. And so I can't speak intelligently enough about it, but a lot of things about the election just don't make sense. And by the way, I predicted that Biden would win, right? So please don't take me as like, oh, there's no way Trump could lose. But like Ohio goes 8.3 points to Trump. A state like Michigan and Wisconsin still votes Biden. Okay. Turnout in like Milwaukee is up like 80-90% in Detroit and like Atlanta, but in other similar blue major cities like Cleveland, it's like normal. There were a lot of wonky things. It's like some of the, you know, the mail-in ballots, addresses not being the right address on file. And there's a lot. And again, I'm only scratching the surface. I personally think that there was probably fraud. I don't think you need a centralized person to direct the fraud for it to happen. All you need is the incentive structure aligned so that people on a low level know that if they commit fraud, they would be rewarded or that they're incentivized to do it, or even that they're afraid to not do it, right? Like rhetoric that Trump is the next Hitler. Kind of creates an environment where somebody, if they want to fabricate 500 votes or they want to throw out 500 Trump votes or whatever, I think they could get away with it, right? And they would be like, they would be telling themselves, I'm not committing fraud and preventing the next Hitler from taking power, right? So I don't know. I think that there were a lot of incentives on the local level. Do I think it was enough to sway the election? I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure. I definitely think that it could sway like a couple states. Like I'm willing to believe that Georgia, there were enough absentee ballots, which should not have been accepted if you did a proper audit. Georgia should flip red. I don't know if the case is true in Pennsylvania. I don't know, Michigan, maybe Wisconsin, maybe Arizona. I don't know. So I think that there was a lot of fraud. I don't know if there was, I don't have a good grasp of the numbers and the evidence to tell you that it would change the outcome of the election. I do think, though, that Trump is absolutely within his legal rights to challenge this legally and to ask for recounts and audits. And an audit's very different from a recount. A recount just recounts the votes. An audit looks at the votes to see if they were proper or not. So I think he's within his rights. I encourage him to do so. My view is like, let smarter people handle this and let's let the evidence come out. I'm open-minded. I'm willing to admit that Trump lost, but I also am willing to say that there could have been large-scale fraud, which really could have changed the whole thing. I honestly don't know.
Yeah. So I'm looking right now. I could probably pull this up, but I'm just looking at that New York Times 2020 map of each county in if it shifted from 2016 to 2020, and there's really no rhyme or reason. Like most of Ohio shifted more red, but then you go right next door to Pennsylvania and like nothing shifted right. Hardly anything shifted right. Michigan, nothing shifted right. It almost all went left. It just looks, there's no really across the nation. There's no rhyme or reason. Like who would have thought Trump in Miami-Dade, a county he lost by 30 percentage points, would only lose it by 7 percentage points and still lose the election. Like he won Florida by almost 4 percentage points. I mean, nobody for the most part saw that coming. And then you like look at Texas, and I will show Texas for what it's worth. You know, I was reading all about this turnout in Texas. I was getting a little worried, but something, you know, they didn't seem to be investing much in Texas. But then you look at this map and like all the Hispanic heavy counties went heavily to Trump, like compared to 2016. It's just, this is a hard election to really grasp, trying to understand what the heck happened. You know, I will share this map because I think it's worth showing because so people could see. So give me 1 second here and this will, I just think these types of things, because when you compare this to 2016, it made a lot of sense in 2016, like across the board. Let me, where's this at? Give me 1 second here. 2020. Here, let's see this. I think this is it. Okay, so I am going to show just this. And I don't know if this could be seen very well. I'm going to try to zoom in here. But
whoa, cool.
Okay, so I don't know how that looks on screen.
You can see it kind of well.
Yeah. Okay, so here's Ohio. I don't know if this looks makes sense. But all these arrows here are counties and how they shifted from 2016.
Can you click on Geauga?
Yeah,
I think Geauga was blue. Wow. Okay. Yeah,
2 points. And I have something else to share on that too. But as you can see, most of Ohio, especially Southeast Ohio, the white working class areas along the river, up in the Northeast Ohio, some parts of Northwest Ohio as well shifted more Republican. But look at Pennsylvania. Like, if you saw these counties on election night, and I remember even Nate Cohn and I think of some of these other pollsters and poll readers or what have you, saw Mahoning and Trumbull County go to Trump, and they immediately thought, like, this part of Pennsylvania, Western, where it was going to shift. And look, it didn't.
Yeah,
it was weird. I honestly thought with that whole fracking thing, this part of from northern – that part of Pennsylvania, like down through here, it's all fracking country. And for it not to shift more Republican just sort of surprised me. It just looks – does it smell this smell test or whatever? I don't know. It looks funky. There's Michigan. You know, not much movement for Trump here. Some counties shifted a little bit. And then Wisconsin. Now, this is honestly ended up only being a 20,000 vote margin, and some counties did shift, but again, it just no rhyme or reason across the board. Let me take you real quick to Texas, see what I'm just showing. I mean, look at these counties in Texas along the river or along the Rio Grande River. I mean, look at these arrows, huge movement. I mean, there was one I think that shifted like 30 points, there's one 28, 38 points right here. I mean, that's wow. Remarkable. And then down here, Miami-Dade. Again, 22 points more Republican than 2016. So when you saw some of these counties coming, especially in Florida, I thought, slam dunk. You know, who would have thought Ohio, Florida go handily to Trump? You would have thought
right.
he's got this election, but wasn't the case.
Well, that's super weird, right? If Eastern Ohio swings to the right that strongly, the Western PA should. It's the same demographics. It's the same type of people. Exactly. There's no reason why it shouldn't. So that was weird. The other thing that was really weird was election night. They just shut down counting. They shut down. They just stopped counting, went home, and then at 6 a.m. they started counting again. I still haven't heard a good explanation. Like there was a story that like a pipe burst in Fulton County in Atlanta, Georgia, and then that later turned out not to be true. Like why would you stop counting, right? Like what is going on there? We're just going to stop counting. At 1 in the morning. And then we're going to come back at 6 a.m. and resume counting. No, you don't stop counting. And oh, by the way, when we come back, Biden has all these huge leads, right? And the other thing that was weird, the vote batches that were coming in, is like Biden does very well in urban areas, right? I can buy that. But there would be like 100,000 votes for Biden and zero for Trump, which just beggars belief, right? Yes. Because like, again, Biden does well in urban areas. It would be like 90% Biden, 10% Trump. That makes sense. That's the reality of the situation, right? But 100% Biden, not a single person voting Trump, even as a joke. But they would have batches like this, like, you know, 50,000 votes Biden, zero Trump, zero. So there was a lot of really screwy things. And I'm sorry, this vote by mail system, I think, is a horrible system. I think that it's unreliable. I think it undermines democratic integrity. And I think it's I don't know. I don't know why people can't count votes properly and on time. I don't know why it takes a week to count votes in the 21st century. You know, here we Iraq and Afghanistan have more secure elections in some respects than we do. At least in Iraq, they have their little purple thumb that they can when they vote. Right here, you know, who the F knows if your vote's been tallied or not. So I think it was a very screwy election. The turnout was up across the board in some states, but not in others. Which doesn't make sense. You'd expect a uniform increase in turnout. So I think it was really screwy. And, you know, if evidence comes out that there was fabrication on the order of 10, 20, 30,000 votes, then I wouldn't be very surprised. I don't know. I honestly don't know. But I think it was just weird. It was really, really, really weird. And I don't have much confidence in the results. I'll say that.
Yeah, I'll say this. I guess I'll make a bold statement. I don't think Biden wins this election if voting by mail wasn't so prevalent in certain states. I don't think they would have got the vote out in those states. And then another thing, I just want to give credit to Ohio and Florida. I think they were A+ in terms of their election returns and how quickly they got everything done, especially Florida. I mean, it was they have a law in Ohio might be similar where they could count ballots as they're received. They're not tabulated, but they're at least entered into the system. And then like Florida election night, literally like at 7 a.m. or 7 p.m. or 7:30 p.m., whatever, whenever the polls close, immediately 80% dumps in like Dade and Broward. And it's like just like that 80 because so many people voted 80% of the voters in Florida voted early. So immediately those votes were known. And by midnight, that state was completely counted. Same with Ohio. The funky thing about Ohio, and here's my issue in watching. I didn't watch much of like NBC or any of the network news, but I did have it on for part of the evening when they were talking about Ohio. And I saw Chuck Todd. He's getting all excited about Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm watching it. And I'm like, these people don't know what they're talking about. I'm like, all of these returns across the board in these counties are like 20% or whatever. You know they're early vote or absentee, which are going to favor Democrats. I'm like, just wait until Election Day comes in. Because they're like, oh, Biden's up 8. What's going on here? This is unbelievable. And then I'm like, I kept tweeting. I'm like, slow down. Just wait for it to come in. And he ended up still winning the state by 8 points. They just made fools of themselves. I did pull up something else here on the screen. Another somebody had made this. I thought it was interesting. These are some of the states here. But again, look at Ohio. Some of these counties, very red. Mahoning. I love what I see there. Great, great work, Mahoning County, but along the river. But again, just across the border. I mean, look at all this red here. And it doesn't go over to West Virginia. It doesn't go over to Pennsylvania. It just doesn't make much sense. So.
It's weird. Oh, the other thing was Florida was very clearly Trump. He had like 3-point lead. There were only like 200,000 votes out and nobody would call it.
Yes. And then they waited forever to call it.
To call Florida. And then Arizona, there was like one vote in. Biden won it immediately.
Yeah.
The way they were calling the election was super weird because they were calling states very early and aggressively for Biden and they were not calling them for Trump. And again, I know I'm a person, blah, 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 blah. But it was so weird to me watching this. And then again, and I was like you, I was following some of the drama on the network news with Ohio results. And they're like, oh, Biden's winning Ohio. And people kept texting me. They're like, Biden's winning Ohio. And I pulled up the result map and I go, no, he's not. Yeah, they have Columbus and like Cleveland in. And they have the absentee ballots in. And I was like, he's not going to win Ohio. They have none of the rest of the counties, you know, none of the 86 other counties other than Cuyahoga and Franklin, right? And then Trump ended up winning Ohio by 8 points. But like the fact that they created that drama to me kind of almost suggests that they came into this like downplaying any sort of evidence that would show Trump doing well and upplaying any evidence that showed Biden doing well to create the narrative for people that went to bed early that Biden had won and that Trump had lost.
So the other aspect I want to talk about that is this whole idea of the Senate and in the House. So the Republicans had a strong night again in the U.S. Senate like they did 2 years ago. You know, they won pretty much all the battlegrounds that they were expected. I mean, we both said McSally was going to lose Arizona. She did. But, you know, they won Iowa. They won Maine. You know, we could have a whole episode on how bad polling was. But Maine, nobody showed Susan Collins even close there. And she ended up winning by like 9 points. It was like an 18 to 20 point miss in polling there. I wasn't terribly surprised that she won. I was happy she won. I don't agree with her on everything, but I think she's a pretty good member who has a good enough relationship with McConnell, where I think McConnell's like, hey, with ACB, Amy Coney Barrett, do your thing. And then I think it ended up working out. Trump went after her over. I think it played out perfectly for her, but she'll be reliable for the most part on certain things moving forward. She'll probably flip on a few votes for Biden, but that is what it is. But, you know, we win that. We win Tillis in North Carolina, another state where there was virtually no polling that showed him up. Iowa was big. And now we got these two Georgia seats. But we had that. So we have at least 50 seats there. And then the House, nobody, myself included, ever expected the Republicans to have the night they had in the House.
No.
And that's like one of those things. It's like they're only, I think it's going to be 222 to 213, something like that, if my math is right. I think it's going to be a nine margin, plus nine Democrat margin heading into a Biden administration. But again, they picked up a lot of seats and it wasn't expected. So it's one of those things where it's like, why were they so successful at the Senate level? They were so successful at the House level, yet Trump still didn't eke it out. Again, these are questions we're going to have moving forward. But, you know, I, again, like Dane, you said, I haven't been following too closely the Trump legal team's findings. I apologize. I had that up. But it's on them to prove. And, you know, we'll see what happens. I just don't they see anything changing. I agree. I think you would need an audit to happen. My hope is that something, I think a couple things. First off, states need to have a better means of cleaning up their voter rolls. And secondly, for federal elections, there should be some sort of federal law in place that says these ballots should be counted by within a certain time frame. It's just ridiculous that we still have ballots over the past week still trickling in certain states. Like, why? How pathetic is it that you're still counting ballots in these congressional races in California?
This like, is
how
horrible.
Do we not know? It's pathetic.
No, it's third world. It's pathetic. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
I mean, we do look like a third world country. If Ohio and Florida can have it done election night, there's zero reason these other states can't either.
Frankly, every state should be like Florida and Ohio. And I second your comments where, you know, when I vote in Ohio, I feel very confident my vote will be counted fairly, accurately and honestly and speedily. And Florida was the joke of the elections in after 2000, and they reformed their system under Jeb Bush, and he did a fantastic job. Maybe we should have voted for Jeb. Low energy. He made their election system fantastic because they get it done. They tabulate it quickly, and it's a very large state with diverse populations, right? They've got cities, suburban, rural areas. They get them in. So I think that, you know, and notice that it's mostly Democratic states where the election systems are third world. And I think that they deliberately keep their systems third world because it creates ambiguity and allows them to have the opportunity to cheat or do exploits. Right. I mean, you look at Democratic governance in Chicago or New York or, you know, whatever the city may be. There's a lot of corruption. Youngstown, Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio. You know, I'm not saying Republicans are free from corruption. Larry Householder is great evidence against that point. But in terms of these urban machines, I don't know. If I were a citizen of Chicago, I wouldn't feel very confident that my vote was being counted. Philadelphia, right? Like, Philadelphia is kind of like a third world country in the way they count ballots and they run their city and that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, good luck to Mr. Trump. You know, I'll make this other point, Michael, while I have you, is I think we should just call Biden an illegitimate president. And I think that we should, whether or not he is or not, I think it's irrelevant. I think we should play the same game the Democrats played, where, you know, Trump was fairly elected in 2016, and the Democrats created this whole Russiagate hoax, which was correct, completely ungrounded for reality. And the media, this is the difference between conspiracy theories on the left and the right. The media will echo the conspiracy theories on the left. Russiagate, systemic racism, socialism works, all these conspiracy theories, they'll repropagate these things, right? Whereas on the right, they'll be like, oh, you guys are all about conspiracy theories. But Trump was denied his first term. He was denied, you know, having a mandate and being able to legislate properly because they said, oh, Russiagate. And they started to investigate him, and they complicated all of his actions because his entire executive team is under investigation for Russia, which wasn't true. It was completely fake, right? It was a hoax. It was nonsense. They knew it was nonsense too. So I think we should say that Biden is an illegitimate president. And I think, you know, as soon as we get a Republican Congress, impeach the guy, find some stupid charge and impeach him and say that he's illegitimate. You know, they threw gears. They don't believe that if Republicans rule, they don't believe that they have legitimate right to rule. They believe that the only people with legitimate the only people who can legitimately wield power are the left, right? That's what they believe. And Republicans, whenever we wield power on federal level, they always find some way to make it illegitimate, right? they always try to put an asterisk, like Kavanaugh. They try to put an asterisk next to his name. So I say we do the same thing. I say we say that Biden is an illegitimate president. He is illegitimate. And whether or not it's true or not, I don't really care. I say,
well,
we
they
say
didn't
it.
Care with Trump.
They didn't care, right? So let's play the same game back at him. Biden's an illegitimate president. He's illegitimate. All this stuff is illegitimate. And I think he should be impeached. We'll find out what for after he takes office. But
yeah. So one final point before we move on. You were talking about Ohio and Florida and how those systems work. And I just think where they differ from other states is how transparent they are. Like in Ohio, if you request an absentee ballot, which my wife did, she received it. She sent it back in, or actually she didn't send it. We dropped it off and we checked the website the next day. It said it was recorded. And in Florida, every single day, every single half hour, they're constantly updating the number of ballots by returned or cast by party in each county. So it's transparent where you know going in roughly of what the numbers are going to look like. And Florida's numbers ended up being better than I even expected. So I just want to, again, give Ohio and Florida credit. I think they're transparent. That's the way it should be in other states. So I guess that's enough, at least on the national level. Let's talk briefly about a Biden administration. I think a lot of this is going to be contingent upon what happens in Georgia in terms of how far he could go. But I don't think it's going to be nearly as bad as I thought it would have been, just because if we retain the Senate and with the how fragile that House Democrat margin is, D+9, I don't think they're going to be able to go as bold as AOC would want them to go.
No. You know, the problem with the Democrats is the idea that these guys are socialists is kind of a canard, right? Is that they're kind of, in some sense, worse than being socialists, in some sense, better. And that they're just total corporatist shills, right? If you look at who Biden is staffing his administration with, it's some of the worst people on the planet. It's like leftovers from the Obama administration and, you know, like Wall Street guys, technocrats, right? They're all these really bland establishment figures. And, you know, at least the socialists, they have positions and you know what you're arguing against and they have policies. And You could make the argument that they're motivated by some need to help people, some benign goal, right? Even if their means are wrong. But the type of people that Biden is looking to staff his potential administration with are some of the worst. Like, you know, you look at foreign policy. Obama was elected on dismantling the Patriot Act and pulling our troops from the overseas wars that Bush launched in the war on terror. And then he proceeded to expand them and institutionalize them. And deepen them and you know, bomb Yemen and bomb Syria and put troops in Syria and bomb American citizens with drones and weddings and do a surge of troops in Afghanistan. And these same people and all these foreign policy moves, right, they're bad enough that they're warlike, but it would be great if they had good results. But they just made the Middle East total chaos. You know, under Trump, have you ever heard about ISIS lately? Have you ever heard about the Middle East? The Middle East has settled down. In my lifetime, the Middle East is the calmest it's ever been under Trump, right? He pulled American troops back. He just killed some terrorists. That sounds like a good strategy to me. But all these experts who got like their master's degree in foreign policy from Georgetown, right? They're going to staff the Biden administration. And these people are absolutely – these are the scum of the universe, because these are the people – to me, like the perfect Biden apparatchik, right, is a, you know, somebody who like Kamala Harris, right? She is technically a minority, but she came from, you know, very wealthy or very educated background. And she's going to get in this administration, or somebody like her is going to get in some post, and they're going to order American troops to invade Ethiopia because we got to spread democracy in Ethiopia. And I'm not even kidding about Ethiopia. Look into this. And some boy from the heartland who's a grass-fed boy, he loves his country, he loves God, family, and country, is going to be sent over to Ethiopia. He's going to have his limbs blown off, right? And when he comes back, they're going to say to him, hey, you've got a lot of white privilege. And your neighbors, right, that have died from fentanyl and we've outsourced their jobs and now they're on opioids, you guys all have white privilege and you're horrible human beings. and we just need 50,000 Somalian refugees in your neighborhood to kind of revitalize it. Like, that's the people that are going to be running the Biden administration. I mean, those people are worse than the AOCs. You know, I in my opinion, these are the worst. These are the scum on the planet. Obama gets elected on reigning in Wall Street, and Wall Street does better under Obama than they did under any other Republican president. They got, you know, like, does that make sense? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know much about some of these people he's picked that he's put on, I don't know, for his cabinet or other spots in his administration. Some of them there was the, who do you pick for the Treasury?
Janet Yellen.
Yeah, Janet Yellen.
So she's teaching the Law School of Economics. Yeah, I met her in person.
Oh, okay.
She's cute.
Interesting.
She's really smart. Yeah, I shouldn't be a little hard by saying she's cute, but she's nice. She's really short. She's nice.
The two things I guess I'll pay close attention to under a Biden administration would be, I guess for me as a CPA, what he plans to do with taxes and what he's able to do. And then second, foreign policy and how he handles the Middle East, how he handles China, and will he get us into another war? You know, that's one positive note for Trump is how he handled that, and he got us out of some of these countries or attempted to, and didn't get us into another war. I'm just curious if we go back to the days of, you know, the establishment, just saying we want to bomb all over the place and get us into another war. So. I'll be curious to see how that goes.
The modern left is all about war. They have no objection to war. Just like they're all about big companies screwing you over. This is it. Like, Amazon can like brutalize their workers, make them work sweatshop conditions. But as long as they say that they support Black Lives Matter, they're okay, right? It used to be gay rights. Whatever the trendy leftist causes, it's like paying penance, right? Like, I can go and I can be Apple Computer and I can use slave labor in China. But then I'm like, Black Lives Matter, and if you disagree, you're a racist. And all of a sudden, the left loves me, right? So the new left, the neo-left, the woke left, whatever you want to call it, uses identity politics to like defend really horrible policies. What they'll do is they'll have like a female Secretary of Defense, and they'll have a trans, you know, head of the army, Secretary of the Army, and they'll be like, hey, this new war in Ethiopia, yeah, it's an imperialist war and we're going to be blowing up the Ethiopians and, you know, your neighbor's going to be coming home in a body bag. But hey, we've got a female Secretary of Defense, girl power. Am I right, guys? You know, that's like all the heads of the defense companies are all women, right? And they're like, well, this is a thing to celebrate. It's just that's the new left. They don't care who we're blowing up, just as long as the person that's pushing the button to blow it up is trans. Right. Or some minority that we got to have them in there. That's it. That's the left. It's horrible. It's totally they've lost any sort of the principles that they had 20, 30 years ago and have replaced it with this identity politics core. And that's going to be the Biden administration. That's going to be it from top to bottom. It's not going to be if you're afraid of socialism and they're going to come and they're going to raise your taxes, they'll raise your taxes. But it's not going to be socialism. It's going to be worse. It's going to be establishmentarianism.
The other thing I'm curious to follow in a Biden administration, how the media is with him. I think it's going to be a complete joke. I think there's going to be softball interview after softball interview. I could see maybe there being an issue if he doesn't go far enough on the left on something where they try to just go after him and cater to what AOC's saying. But I think it's going to be a joke when you compare the press briefings under Trump compared to what they're going to be under Biden. So I'll be curious to see some other spots that he ends up picking or other people he's going to end up picking for some other spots. And I'm sure I'll have some additional thoughts on that. But I guess I'm just not nearly as nervous as I would have been had they had a full-blown trifecta and taking the Senate, had a 52-48 edge in the Senate, had a huge lead in the House, then I would be worried about how far they could go. But I think it's not going to be nearly as ominous as one would have thought.
Yeah, I don't think so in terms of legislative, right? We'll be able to block them on a legislative level. But I do think in terms of staffing the bureaucracy and on the war level and that, there are some risks, right? I get ready. I do think we're going to invade a foreign country. I think it's it's either going to be Ethiopia or Syria, but get ready. Maybe Iran, maybe not. I don't know.
I think you're right. We'll see what happens. So move on real quick. I do want to talk about being that we are MV Red, Mahoning Valley Red. It happened on election night, which was very, very exciting. It's the highlight of a election night, which didn't necessarily go the way we would have hoped. So I have on the screen, which is really fascinating. This is from J. Miles Coleman from the Center for Politics from Virginia. I forget what the exact name of that. What is it? It is Center for Politics. Okay. Whoa, I screwed that up. So anyways, here is the election data from Mahoning and Trumbull counties from 2012, 2016, and 2020 at the presidential level, and then 2018 at the Senate level. And there's a tweet behind this, but I think it is more or less raising red flags for the Democrats as to what is happening here, because look at all this blue in 2012 when Obama carried these two counties by 30 plus percentage points or close to 30 percentage points. Actually, I can't do math in my head. 20 to 25 percentage points as I'm looking at these. And then look at 2016. I mean, look at outside of Warren and Girard and Weathersfield, everything else went red. Then in 2020, look at Trumbull County. All of it went red except Warren and this is actually Liberty Girard. This is Churchill. I don't even know how you guys do it up in Trumbull County, Dan. It's funky with your geography up there.
Don't be mean to Trumbull. It's just 5x5 squares, dude. Easy. I'm gonna look it up. I don't know which
that's
one that
true.
Is.
But I'm sure you're aware of this. There's a sliver of Weathersfield Township that's on the other side of Niles, where they have to have a fire station by Tibbetts Wick, I think. It's just funky how it's separated by Niles and how it's just regardless. I mean, just amazing. Look at Mahoning County. The whole northern portion of Mahoning County was blue in 2012, and then include Boardman and Poland, Struthers, Campbell, all of that. And then look at it in 2020. Beautiful. Look at how red some of these areas went.
That's amazing. That's incredible.
Isn't this a beautiful sight?
Even is that Struthers? Hey, Michael, is that Struthers? There's
Campbell.
Like a little.
That's Camel.
No. There's a blue area that flips red. It's like stretches along the river.
Yes, that's Struthers and Lowville right here. I don't know if you could actually.
Yeah.
Whoops. Yeah. So that's Struthers and Lowville that flipped. And I do have another thing I did want to share real quick. Give me 1 second. The actual results numbers. I'm going to actually I have to go through this when I get to Excel. Maybe lunch one day this week at work. Because I don't have Excel on my computer here. This is actual from the Vindicator with the actual results. These were the unofficial results by community. I could scroll through here. But the big story is what I thought was fascinating was Youngstown had fewer total votes compared to Boardman Township. And Boardman's got like 35,000 to 40,000 people. Youngstown has, 60 to 65,000 people? Yet more people voted in Boardman. Again, I had mentioned this earlier about Cleveland and Youngstown and how the turnout in those two cities wasn't like anything earth shattering compared to some of those other cities in the Midwest. But again, I thought that was fascinating. But Austintown flipped to Trump. Boardman stayed Trump. But you go through the list outside of Girard, which went Biden and Warren.
Niles
and
did too.
Niles.
Barely.
Barely. I mean, just the rest of the county of Trumbull. Big time. I mean, look at Fowler. Hallen went. Hubbard went.
Where's Newton Falls?
Newton Falls did go. Look at that.
And Newton Township? Or did they loop those together?
I think they may have looped them together. And when I do this, I'll make sure I separate everything accordingly. But again, I thought that was kind of interesting to see these results. I'll map it and I'll put it together similar to how it was on that other thing I just shared. But it is exciting to see. Here's an important thing. And I think some of us on Twitter who have been commenting on some of these national tweets from these national pundits have been mentioning is this isn't just a Trump phenomenon anymore. So again, in 2018, a year when you saw Sherrod Brown won these two counties by almost 20 points. In that year, you still had Michael Rooley win a Republican or win a state Senate seat. You had Don Manning win a state House seat. Fast forward to 2020. Al Catrona wins that seat by 20 points, which 4 years ago was D plus 16. It's now Republican plus 20. Obviously, Rooley is still the state senator. I'd expect him to win in 2022. Then you have in Trumbull County, I mean, remarkable. You have a Republican county commissioner. You had Sean O'Brien lose to Sandra O'Brien, which shocked me. You had Mike Loychek beat Gil Blair. You had Mike O'Brien nearly lose to Martha Yoder. This isn't just a Trump thing. I mean, this is now going into the lower levels. Some of the Mahoning County races were Democrats plus 10, which 4 years ago, 8 years ago, 12 years ago were D plus 30, 35, 40. And now they were only 10-point margins. So something has happened here where we're starting to see a reversal. And, you know, I still think it leans Democrat, but I think a lot of those Democrats are the old school Democrats who will vote Republican, maybe at the state level and at the national level. Maybe on the local level, they'll still vote for some of their Democrats because they maybe have a relationship with them or just like them, or the Republicans don't have good opposition. But it's remarkable to see what, you know, 12 years ago when MV Red was a blog, just an idea that never really expected it to happen, at least – you know, and within 12 years, and it's happened, and it's remarkable to see the change and right before our eyes. But we, to our credit, Dane, called it, and saw it happening, and we were right.
And there was one man that facilitated, and that was Donald J. Trump, right?
Yes.
Which is ironic that he's a billionaire celebrity, and he went over the working class. It wasn't Mitt Romney, right? And it was Trump and Trump's policies, and I think that there's – you know, Trump is eventually going to leave, whether he gets four more years or not, and he'll be done. Maybe he'll run again in 2024. But Trump's going to be gone. The question is, what does the party look like after Trump, right? And that's a really, really important conversation to have. And I think that the party – I made the point on a previous blog, Michael, that by catering towards working class issues, you're going to win over minorities, not by doing the – not by treating, you know, blacks as blacks or Hispanics as Hispanics, but treating them as Americans, as fellow citizens, and as working people with the same wants and desires, right? As anybody else, that you'll win them and you'll win them strongly. And in fact, in this recent election, Trump improved his margins dramatically with Hispanics, a little bit with the black population, and I think with Asians as well. So he improved across all minority categories because he ran as a working class Republican, somebody who was able to blend social conservatism, traditionalism, patriotism with an economics that is, you know, capitalist, but a restrained capitalism, a capitalism that's pro-worker, a humane capitalism. And I think that's the winning message. And once you can kind of divorce it, we need to give a lot of thanks to Donald Trump for clearing the GOP of a lot of ideological baggage that had been inherited from Reagan, which was appropriate in the Reagan era. But Reagan, you know, the Reagan era is very different from the era we're in now in terms of economics, especially. And Trump was able to clear that baggage, and we owe him a deal of thanks. And he was able to create an opening. And I think that the party needs to continue with its aggressive tone, maybe not all the character flaws of Donald Trump, but with the message, right, of a pro working class message, and you'll continue to win the Mahoning Valley. What we cannot do is fall back into Mitt Romneyism, because Romney is a loser. He's a huge loser. I voted for Mitt Romney, but he's a loser. I mean, he won in Utah. He parachuted in with his fellow co-religionists and they got him elected, but that's a losing message. Paul Ryan is a loser, right? The Lincoln Project, these guys are losers. They can't win. Their ideology is a dead ideology. And we need to take the Trump. Trumpism must survive without Trump. The Republican Party must become a Trump party. Maybe not with all, again, Donald Trump's character flaws, but his message, we need to retain that message and grow it and articulate it with a new generation and new people that are maybe more articulate and the message than Trump was.
No, and I agree 100%. And I'm hoping in one of our future episodes, I know this might catch people off guard, I'd like to have Dave Beatrice on. So he's been going on a Twitter spree over the last week or two, attacking David Pepper and the Ohio Democrat Party because they essentially have abandoned the working class voters. And he's been calling them out on it. And I've retweeted some of his tweets because I, as a Republican, especially a Republican in Mahoning Valley, I want their leadership to continue because it hasn't been good and it's probably only going to get worse for them. And I think they're naive. You know, they care so much about making gains. Oh, I'm going to make gains in Franklin County. I'm going to make gains in Harrison County. But they completely forgot that there's 86 other counties in the state that they got to tend to. And they care so much about I think there's this bubble around Franklin County and Columbus where I think sometimes the people don't realize what's going on outside of that. And I think that's the case with the Ohio Democrat Party. So I'd like to have Dave on. He's quite opinionated, but I think he's a former Mahoning County Democrat chairman, but to his credit, he in 2016, he saw the writing on the wall that there was going to be issues in the Mahoning Valley. Pepper ignored him. He continued this election saying this is pretty much the same thing. And they were, again, the Democrats abandoned it. The Republicans seized on it. The Republicans made the investments they needed to flip it. They wanted to flip it, and they were able to flip it. And now Dave Beatrice is calling out Dave Pepper. And I think I could understand from their side. I mean, how much longer? How much more losing do you want? Because outside and pretty much in our lifetime, Dane, outside of 2006, when have they won statewide? They haven't. You know, they've been fortunate that they've been able to win on the presidential level, and they've been able to win with Sherrod Brown as of late. But outside of that, what have they been able to offer? You know, they won with Obama too, but again, it's not trending the way you want. You know, again, Republican governor, and you know, that won by 4 points in 2018. In an election when the Democrats did well nationwide and DeWine wasn't expected to win. And so, again, I'm going to try to get Dave on. I just, you know, maybe for part of an episode, just pick his brain to see what his thoughts are. Because I do find it interesting that he's going after David Pepper as much as he is.
I think he might want to. Yeah, I think he might want to go for the chair. I would love to have Dave Beatrice on. I think, you know, I wouldn't be a jerk to him. I like Dave Beatrice. He's a character, right? Like you can't not like him. I would love to have Dave Beatrice on. I think it would be a great conversation. So if you can do that, get it. I think we get lots of viewers. I think we get like 50 billion viewers. Yeah, get Dave Beatrice on.
Yeah, and we're definitely obviously willing to have opposing viewpoints on the show. We're not.
That's all I got on that one.
Yeah, and that'll be a good one. So I think that's a good segue into our final topic that maybe we'll talk a lot about moving forward on the podcast, which is the Governor Mike DeWine here in the state of Ohio. The Trump base hates his guts for the most part. I think I'm putting it mildly, actually. They can't stand him.
You were cutting out on – you were cutting out, Michael. What was it? What was it you were cutting out? Start again.
Oh, sorry about that. So, you know, we want to talk about Mike DeWine and – I think it's going to be a very fascinating race with the Republican Mike primary in 2022. And that election will really start kicking in gears probably by midsummer next year. But it's interesting because the Trump base, the coalition of hardcore Trump supporters do not like Mike DeWine. From everything I could tell on social media, they are not fans of him. Hell, they booed him when he was at a Trump rally. But I also think, you know, I'm making the prediction now, I think Mike DeWine's going to be very tough to beat in 2022 in the Republican primary. I'm going to make the hot take now. I think, and here's why I say that. Who is it going to be? Who's going to be the opposition here? So a couple names come up. Jim Renacci, who ran unsuccessfully in 2018 against Sherrod Brown for Senate. And then Jim Jordan has hinted, or he's made some tweets kind of going after DeWine, but he's also made some of the same tweets going after just Democrat governors with their restrictions. So I don't really know if a congressman's going to be eyeing up a gubernatorial spot. I could probably see Jim Jordan maybe wanting to run for Senate in 2024 against Sherrod Brown. So, I mean, I think right now it's going to be Jim Renacci. I'm Facebook friends with him. I followed him for the last few years. Everything I could see from his posts, he's going to run. And my pushback to the hardcore Trump supporters is the guy lost by 7 points in 2018. I think if he was such a strong candidate, why didn't Trump do more to help him, hold rallies for him in 2018? And why did he struggle in a race that I think the Republicans had Josh Mandel was able to actually run in 2018? I think he would have beat Sherrod Brown. So I just think it's going to be a unique coalition. I think it's going to be a fascinating race to watch, and I'll have more to say on it. But I think DeWine is going to be very tough to beat in 2022. And I know a lot of Republicans don't like him right now, but I think you're going to have a lot of crossovers because I think there's going to be a lot of independents who do like him. And I think there's a lot of Democrats who are giving him the benefit of the doubt and are going to ask themselves, our guy's probably not going to win, or girl, whoever runs for the Democrats, just with the way the state's trending, they're going to have to decide, do you want to vote in the Democrat primary, or you're going to want to vote in the Republican one, vote for DeWine? So that's, I'm kind of all over the place here. I've had a lot of thoughts on this one, but I do think DeWine's going to be tough to beat. That's just my first thoughts, but I'm curious to hear what Dane has to say. We haven't talked too much off the air about DeWine. So I've been very interested to hear what your thoughts are on him.
So a couple of points. One is I agree with you that the 2020 primary and then election is going to be a really big deal in Ohio. I know within the young Republican groups that I'm plugged into, and I'm barely plugged in to several of the young Republican groups, they are all talking about the upcoming race. I am not confident that DeWine runs again. I thought the agreement was DeWine would run for one term, make John Husted his lieutenant, and then in 2022, Husted runs.
Yeah, and that was my understanding too. But he, and I think it was in the Plain Dealer a couple weeks ago, it came out where he said he told the Plain Dealer, yes, I'm going to run in 2022. So that's the only reason I'm bringing this up.
DeWine
said that, yeah. Because I agree with you. That was my understanding as well. Is Husted said, I'm gonna hop off. I'll let you run head to head against, who did he run? Mary Taylor, was it against? Yeah, I think it was Mary Taylor. Yeah. And then, DeWine won. But yeah, go ahead.
So DeWine sent both of my children baseballs. Shanley wrote them a letter, and he sent them a little baseball. And that it was really cute. I think that there's a lot of anger at DeWine. Especially within the Republican Party. I think everything you said is correct. Jim ran once and lost. And once you lose a statewide race, it's hard to overcome that because you kind of have the loser stench, right? And I think Jim's a decent guy.
I do too.
I don't think he ran, if I'm being frank, I don't think he ran a very good Senate campaign against Sherrod Brown. I think Sherrod Brown was beatable. I think Jim could have beat him, but he ran a horrible campaign. And that will prevent people that might be inclined to support Jim to challenge DeWine. I think if it's Husted versus Jim, Husted wins hands down, no doubt in my mind. If it's DeWine versus Jim, I think it could be tight. I ultimately would put my money with DeWine. I would agree with you. I do think, if there are others that challenge DeWine, if there's divided opposition, DeWine will win easily. Because he might not have the majority, but he definitely has a plurality. So, the anti-DeWine vote is split up. I think it would be tough. I don't know. What's ironic is that this could be a really good opening for Democrats to come in and swoop in and take the governor's seat. But they're just too weak at the moment. They have no farm team that I don't think they're
going to put up a credible none whatsoever. Candidate.
They already, Richard Cordray or Rob Cordray. I don't know. Is it Richard or Rob?
Richard.
Richard Cordray. He was kind of their ace in the hole, and that didn't work. So I don't know. I think you're right. I think DeWine may be able to pull off a second term. But
he's gonna have a unique coalition to do it, though, in the primary, though. That's my thought.
He would have independents. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. And I think he'll have crossover Democrats who will just come across and vote for vote for. Sort of like in 2016, the Republican primary for president, how many Democrats came over to vote for Kasich.
Right.
And because Kasich ended up winning the primary by, I think, 11 or 12 points. But a lot of – like I knew people on a personal level, quite a few, who were Democrats. He said, this is the first time I'm voting Republican, but I'm doing so to vote for Kasich to stop Trump. So I could see something like that transpiring yet again. But I agree with you. Like the Democrat bench is weak. Like one of their strongest candidates that the Democrats have been trying to hype up was this Kathleen Clyde, who's a Portage County commissioner who lost in this past election. Kathleen. So, she was on. I saw her on some tweets like for the Biden campaign about like up and coming Democrats, and they've been trying to. I hate to say use the word hype, but they've been trying to hype her up like she's going to be this big thing. Yeah, and she lost.
She just lost. Yeah.
Yeah. So. That could have been one that they and they like this the mayor of Dayton, Nancy Whalen, something like that.
She's probably their best candidate actually, because she kind of got national fame, right? When there's the Dayton shooting,
correct?
Nan Whaley.
But, I mean, So outside of that, though, there's really. Maybe like a Tim Ryan, but he's washed up goods. Like you saw, he lost his own county, Trumbull County. So, and to his credit, he even said he thinks. What's that?
I just want to talk about Tim Ryan real quick, but keep finishing. Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say Ryan's credit, he had said in the Vindicator I think it was the Vindicator about a week ago. He says 2022 is going to be a tough year for the Democrats in Ohio.
Yeah. Tim Ryan, what did he Hagan, our girl Hagan, lost, but she did really well versus him, right? It was like a 8-7 point, like it was the tightest he's been.
Yeah.
And Tim Ryan 2020.
Yeah. And I'll have to put a chart together to show
the results.
She lost by 7.5 points. I'll put a chart together where you see like he peaked where he won like one of his elections, I don't know, by 40, 45 points, something like that. And since then it was like 37, 35. And then the Pisa was 21 and now 7.5. I think he knows his writing's on the wall. And another thing we've been talking a lot about it is redistricting. And a lot of people have been talking about his seat being the one that's going to be screwed over, not screwed over. You know, drawn out, and he's going to be in trouble.
Yeah, I think. It's interesting. Tim Ryan, this might be the end of Tim Ryan, because his seat's probably going to get redistricted. He's probably going to be gone, and he could have been a statewide candidate, but not anymore. Not anymore, right? He kind of gave that up.
And he's the type of Democrat, like a Sherrod Brown, that I think could do well. But he's when you're losing your home county, you're gonna struggle. I don't even think he would necessarily even win the Mahoning Valley in a gubernatorial race or a Senate race, whatever it would be.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. It'll be interesting, but we might be seeing the end of Tim pretty soon here.
Yeah, so that's something else we'll have plenty to talk about in 2021 when redistricting happens. I guess one final point on DeWine. You know, a lot is being said about him and COVID. I'll say this to people. I understand you don't like him. I think he's honestly trying his hardest to like walk a tightrope right now. He does not want to go to the level of like the Michigan governor or some of these other Democrat governors with massive restrictions, but he also doesn't want to do nothing. I think he's trying to walk a tightrope to try to do something. Cause you know, unfortunately these COVID numbers aren't good. I don't really necessarily pay a ton of attention to the cases. I care more about the hospitalizations, and those trends in ICUs haven't been good as of late. And I don't think they're going to get any better, especially around Thanksgiving, Black Friday, and then heading into Christmas. So that's been my concern, because it really kind of tapered off there over the summer. But then when people started going back inside, the numbers started picking up, and it hasn't been good. And I think he's trying his hardest to be as practical and as reasonable as possible. But I think it's to the point that there's such a hatred of him from some on the right that anything he even proposes is just viewed upon as socialism or too restrictive. And I just wish, you know, not that it matters. I've been willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think his curfew actually is a weak move. I don't think it's going to do anything. I think he needed to go further on that, not with a curfew, but with other things. But I think he's trying his hardest to not completely piss off the right to win in 2022. But again, I don't know. He's in a tough situation right now.
You're kind of a little bit, Michael. I don't know if you were kind of for other people. I think there's a little bit. It was choppy. I agree with you, actually, on Mike DeWine. I don't hate a Mike DeWine. It's a fine line to walk with Corona. I think I've given my take on the virus in previous episodes, so I'm not going to restate that. But I think he's trying to do the best. I don't have a hate for him. He hasn't shut us down as strictly as some other states. So he's getting hit from all sides. And yeah, Mike DeWine is probably not my favorite governor, and I think he could be a little bit more dynamic. I think he spent a little too much money on kind of programs that really didn't go anywhere. But I don't hate him as much as other people. I really, really don't. And as long as we have a Republican legislature, I'm okay with DeWine.
Yeah, no, I agree. But that's all I guess I won't really want to talk about on this episode. There's going to be plenty of topics to talk about moving forward. Like I said, I'm going to try to get Dave Beatrice on maybe the next episode while he's still heated about David Pepper, the Democrat chairman for the state of Ohio. We'll have redistricting to talk about. Maybe we get some Republican candidates on. I would love to get Tom McCabe on, Mahoning County chairman, to talk about kind of how he envisions the party moving forward in Mahoning County, and then also maybe the Trumbull County chairman. I forget his name. I think it begins with a W, but kind of just talk about like how they envision moving forward. I think now is the time. If like you're on the fence about running in one of these two counties and you're a Republican, I think now would be the opportune time that makes the most amount of sense, depending upon the race. And if it makes sense, you know, there's like the Michelle LaFleur.
Are you saying that you should run?
No. There's nothing I even want to.
You could bring your accountant logic and rules to Columbus.
We do have a Republican auditor in Mahoning County who's a CPA, Ralph Meacham. So we do got that going for us. But I'm just thinking across the board in either county. I mean, now's the time if we want to continue on this momentum where the Republican Party is viewed upon favorably in the Mahoning Valley for the first time in my lifetime, now would be the time to do that. So I'm just throwing that out there to people.
Well, I'm just saying you should run. It might be your time. Where do you live? What do you live in, Youngstown or Boardman? I can't remember.
I live in Boardman.
You should run for Boardman City Council. Do you have a city council or do you have township trustees?
We're township trustees, and I'm pretty sure the one – is a Republican, actually. They're nonpartisan when you vote, but I know the one, I know his son, and I know him, and I'm pretty sure the one is a Republican. So we got that going for us.
Why don't you let me look at the people. You should run. You know, the world is calling out for young leadership. You know,
I wouldn't even know what to even run for. But I will say this, like Al Catrona, state rep, 30. Mike Lochak, Trumbull County State Rep, 30. Dane, you and I are, I think, 31. So, you know, now's the time for the young Republicans out there to get the job done.
Yeah, this is – listen, if you go to Republican meetings, it's all baby boomers. And you know, and there are no young people. So there's ample opportunity. People get involved. Start going to local township meetings. Get Mike – to run for local office. You should definitely do it.
I don't think my name would fit on a yard sign, Dane. It's too long.
Metz. Michael Metz. That's all you gotta do. Metz.
That's
there
my
you
nickname,
go.
Metz. they call me. So on that note, we'll conclude the episode. Thank you everybody for tuning in.
Yeah.
I know this is kind of like a last minute thing, but we wanted to get an episode in. We'll make sure we promote the podcast, the audio version, pretty good. And we'll continue to post a lot of good stuff on social media, especially I've been doing a lot more on the Twitter side, but I'll try to up my, up the ante on the Facebook side and get a lot of good data on there. Good postings on the social media side on Facebook. So, any final thoughts as we conclude episode 24, we're a quarter of the way to the century mark here, Dane. Remarkable.
No, I have no final thoughts except that Michael Mensinger should help make MV Red a reality by running for township trustee and boardman.
We'll see what I could do. All right. On that note, thank you everybody again for tuning in. We'll be back here hopefully within the next couple of weeks with perhaps Dave Beachers if I can make it happen. So take care, everybody. We'll see you, Dane.
Okay, bye, Michael. Bye.